Okay, everybody, welcome, welcome, welcome to this preview session, and thank you for joining me today over your lunch hour for those of us in the East Coast and over your coffee for those of us on the West Coast. Our topic today is leadership, and we call these the essential skills of leadership. These are the kinds of skills that if you've ever had the opportunity to observe a leader in action that has tremendous respect and tremendous followership and people go above and beyond to support this particular leader, this is a leader that has mastered the skills that we talk about in this particular session. These are not difficult skills that are part of the essential skills of leadership. Cognitively, there is not anything that any of us will have a difficult time understanding. However, these skills are not common practice amongst leaders. I want to thank you for, hopefully you had a chance to take a look at the pre-work that I sent to you yesterday. And I'm wondering if anyone has any input for me, how would you solve the leadership mystery that I sent to you yesterday when a team member reaches a poor decision? Can anyone give us any insight? How would you fix that?
Well, this is Patty. I'll share what I think, how I think I would handle it.
Okay, Patty. Thanks.
Well, the leader thinks it's an unworkable solution, so they obviously see some holes in the plan. So I think just having an open, rather than rejecting it outright, is to say, okay, well, let's talk about that. How would you handle XYZ, whatever the hole is, and then have them start to sort of self-discover that there's some issues with it, or maybe they have an answer to how to deal with it, but kind of keep that dialogue going to talk through the team leader's concerns and see if they can start with the unworkable solution and turn it into something that would be workable.
Great. Excellent approach. And you're very close to the solution that I'm going to share with you a little later today. And that had a reason for sharing that leadership mystery with you, which I will kind of reveal at the very end of our workshop today. Really good input, Patty, and I really like your approach. And I can tell that you are a person that teaches leadership skills training.
Oh, thanks.
So I would like to begin by sharing a slide with you that that I really enjoy, and I think it has a lot of relevance to to all of us that are on the call today. It relates to each one of us, and the reason that I say that it relates to each of us on the call is that when things are going wrong in our world, whether it's a leadership issue, whether we're a team leader somewhere, or we're managing a team, and the team isn't just they're just not responding the way we would expect them to respond, or they're doing things that we'd prefer that they not do, whenever we have a challenge, the typical thing, I call it the human condition, the typical thing is that we tend to look at the other person as the problem, right? And so I wanted to say up front that the leadership curriculum that I'm going to be sharing this preview, which comes from Vital Learning, we have been affiliated with Vital Learning for many, many years, and this is not a fix your team kind of curriculum. That's not what this is about. It really is an opportunity for us as leaders or for people that we would touch in leadership training. It's really directed towards the lower level of leaders, team leaders, supervisors, first line management kinds of folks. It's really designed for them to take a look at themselves and how their behavior and the things that they're doing is impacting the results that they're getting. So I like sharing this slide because I think it kind of sort of points to something that we all share in common, and that is that we want to fix other people, and sometimes we miss the challenges and maybe the contribution that we ourselves as leaders might be making to the challenge that we're experiencing. So what I'd like to do is I'd just like to walk through what the goal is for the time that we have today. This is going to be a very short experience in one of the courses in the leadership curriculum from ViaLearning, which is called the Essential Skills of Leadership. I'm going to talk, in addition to the short experience, I'm going to talk with you a little bit about customization, the broader curriculum, our relationship with the University of Phoenix, certification and train the trainer. I'm going to offer you an opportunity to evaluate the curriculum more fully. This will just be kind of a whiff today. If you want to get a closer look at it, I will be offering you an opportunity to do that. We'll talk, as I mentioned a moment ago, about the leadership mystery and why I shared that with you. And those of you that are on the call, I know there's a couple of you that that are external consultants like us and are interested in a relationship with this publisher. I'd be happy to follow up with you about your interest in that, but we'll talk about that offline. We won't be discussing that in today's session. So that's the plan. And I'd like to begin with how I open up. This curriculum is available in classroom. It's available in online. And of course, it can be approached in a blended fashion, which is the way I like to work with it the most. I'd like to share with you the way I like to kick things off in the Essential Skills of Leadership. And I use this activity in the classroom that I call my first job. And what I've done here is I've just kind of taken some industry segments and, you know, through no real magic, just as a way to group people into four corners of the room where I will have a flip chart waiting for them. I invite them to think, not necessarily it doesn't have to be their first job, but some early work experience that they'd like to reflect on, and to go to that corner of the room. And then what I do is I tell them that what I'm looking for is I'm looking for the lessons of leadership that they've learned along the way. We learn lessons of leadership, according to Noel Tishy, who talked about something called leadership points of view. We all are forming kind of a leadership philosophy that guides us and causes us to act certain ways and do certain things in situations that calls upon our leadership. We may not even be conscious of these things, but they're always operating within us. And so what I'm trying to do in this activity is I'm trying to get people to bring these to a more conscious place and really think about them. And I tell them that, you know, we learn lessons about leadership because we're watching leaders all the time. And of course, when we're brand new in employment situations and we have no leadership experience at all, we're really watching people. But we really are watching people throughout our careers. And we learn from them, you know, by what they do and by what they don't do. And sometimes we're lucky enough to learn from leaders because they are extraordinary and they role model exceptional behavior. Other times we learn from leaders because they're, quite frankly, you know, seriously lacking leadership skills. And so what I invite them to do is to share, you know, some of a story that they can remember from a leader that they interacted with, whether it was a positive story or a negative interaction. And what was the lesson of leadership that fell out of that experience for them? And then I share a personal example. And the example that I share came from when I was 17 years old and my parents had a place at the beach, and I decided that I wanted to work, even though I was at the beach for the summer. I decided I wanted to work, and I worked for a place called Virginia Fried Chicken. And because I was 17 and everyone else that applied, it was a brand new restaurant, everyone else that applied was either 15 or 16 year old, they made me the manager. Great criteria, right? So I'm the manager, and before the place officially opens, they invite me in for, I don't know, 3 or 4 days, and they teach me everything. They teach me how to use this really terrifying meat cutting machine, and they teach me how to rotate the food and why I should rotate the food. And you know, so we go through all of the things that I need to learn. And then after a couple of days, they leave. And there I am, you know, they gave me the key basically, and they told me how to put the money in the freezer at the end of the day, and they left. And so there I was, you know, managing this restaurant. It's kind of terrifying to think back on it, but this actually happened to me. And so everything for the first week of my employment, everything is going just great until I get to a Friday night. And I stop there and I ask the group of supervisors and managers in the training, what do you suppose happened to me the first Friday night? So I'll ask that question to you. What do you suppose happened that first Friday evening? What happened that night? What do you think?
We got huge crowds of people.
Yeah, we got huge crowds of people.
Your staff.
And what else happened?
Your staff called off.
Yes, everyone called off. Everyone called off. Now, I, of course, had worked all day long that Friday, and I had to stay. I had no choice. I was the manager. I had to stay, and I had to work that evening shift. I remember at one point collapsing on the floor in a heap and sobbing. And I sat there on the floor, and I'm sobbing, and I'm thinking, my gosh, you know, nobody prepared me for this. And in a single instant, I knew everything I didn't know. I had been trained for a week, but I knew everything I didn't know, and namely what I didn't have a clue about was the people dimension of the business, and that was, of course, where I was getting into trouble. So they're in their four corners. I invite them to share their stories. I invite them, you know, to put their pearls of wisdom. What was the leadership lesson that came out of it? For me, it was that I needed to be prepared for the people side of the business. No one had helped me prepare for that. And so we, you know, get those nuggets, those gems from them, and we, you know, usually take time for a story or two. And then I invite them back to their tables, and I say, you know, just like we are always observing leaders in action, people are observing us as well. They're always watching us. So with that, I'd like to ask you this question, and that is, why would people work for you? Why would people work for you? And actually, I'm looking for the answer that I'm looking for is actually two answers. There's two reasons that people will work for you. What do you suppose, and of course, I would be using a flip chart at this point in time, but what do you suppose those two reasons are? Why do people work for you? What do you think?
They've grown to respect you.
Okay, they respect you. They work for us because they respect us. Okay, good answer. And that would fall into the category of, I'm looking for two specific answers, and I'm going to put that one into the category of people will work for us because they want to work for us. So if people will work for us because they want to work for us, what do you suppose the other answer is?
Because they have to.
They will work for us because they have to work for us. And of course, all of us on the call today really would like to work for leaders that want to work for us because they work for us because they want to work for us. Now, just as there are two reasons that people will work for us, very interesting coincidence, there also happens to be two kinds of leaders. We have leaders on the one end of the continuum that are very, very controlling. And we have leaders on the other end of the continuum that see themselves as more of a coach. And these, you know, kind of represent two very different philosophical leadership viewpoints. And, you know, I tend to think, and the way I approach this in the classroom, is that I tend to think that maybe there are some people that maybe permanently live in one of these or the other. But I think for a lot of us, it is kind of a continuum, and we kind of move along this continuum based on maybe how we're feeling, how much stress we're under, you know, how well things are going, how excited we are, how engaged we are, all those different things. But the truth is that we may have a, you know, one of these as a little bit more of a philosophical home than the other. And the controller, the folks that are kind of at that end of the continuum, these are people that believe that if they don't push people to do their work, that people will not work. And they use compliance to get people to work. And a lot of times we think of compliance as threats of punishment. But the truth is, rewards are also compliance. It is also a form of compliance. And Daniel Pink, if you've read his work, Drive, where he talks about Motivation 2.0, he addresses the idea of using rewards and kind of puts that under the magnifying glass and really brings it into question, something that we really want to think about today. But the truth is that if we're using compliance, we're getting people to work within a given window. They will work right up to the point to get to the reward, or they will work just beyond the point where they will have to deal with a punishment. And they rarely will work outside of that window. And we tend to get an end product from them that is just enough to get by. Whereas, of course, the coach is looking at, how can I smooth the way? What's in your way? Why can't you do things effectively? And what can I, you know, remove that is getting in the way of you producing the very best quality job that you can produce? And at this point in time in the program, and I'm not actually going to do this with you today, but in this point in time of the program, I share with people, you know, what we're really talking about here, you know, when we look at this philosophy, we're really talking about what drives employee engagement in your organization. And the difference is really right here, is the folks that are really on that coaching side. And so what I'd like to do is I'd like to, you know, offer you a chance to discover what your employee engagement IQ is. And I have this pop quiz. And what I've done is I've created, I'm going to share with you, a set of cards, and a little later today I will tell you how you can get a set of these cards if you'd like them. I've created a set of cards that show, just take some basic, here's the two reasons that people work for you, and here is the number of employees that are actively disengaged, you know, and then we get into what the cost is, $3,400 in salary for every $10,000, and of course the overall cost, the profitability, and all kinds of things. So I have 10 questions and 10 answers. And the way that I work with this is based on the size of the group. I will often have table groups work together. If I'm working with a large group, I'll give them cards and I'll have, you know, one half of the room has questions and another half of the room has answers, and their job is to go match up the questions to the answers. I've also actually done it with people if it's a fairly technical group and they all have smartphones. Instead of handing out the cards, I actually will give them the questions and have them research it and look it up. It takes a little bit more time to do that approach. But what this does, by having people actually do the research and come up with the very tangible, you know, numbers, they're able to start to see, you know, when they have team members that are not fully engaged, and of course, you know, the statistics out there still really for average organizations about, you know, we can expect about half of our employees are not fully engaged in the work of our organization. And the cost for this is just phenomenal. In the U.S., $300 billion alone. So they start to quantify the impact of a team that is not fully engaged, and it helps them to be more motivated and more aware of the need to pay attention to the concepts that we're talking about in this particular program, which is why I insert this quiz here. So what we do in this program, there are really three things, and we're not going to get into all three of these things. We're really only going to talk about the first skill point in the Essential Skills of Leadership. And I mentioned a little bit ago when I was talking about the program, and if you have the handout that I sent to you the first thing this morning, you will find these objectives on page 1 of the handout. As I said a little earlier, there is nothing here that is cognitively difficult. All of these things are easy to understand. They're just not common practice amongst leaders. So the things that we focus on in this program, of course, the first thing is self-esteem. Few leaders are aware of how fragile and our self-esteem really is, and often they're just busy and not really tuning into the way they interact with us and the impact that that has on our self-esteem. And of course, then the domino effect of that self-esteem and how we tend to produce less and don't feel confident, and the impact on the organization. The second skill that we work on is a focus on behavior and not attitudes. And it's really interesting in all the years that I've been working with this curriculum how difficult people get this conceptually, but then when we actually use video examples and get them to describe what they're seeing on the screen, it's fairly obvious that there's some ingrained behavior. They make up amazing stories of things that, you know, they just didn't see happen. So it really is difficult to get people to make that shift and really start talking about behavior and not attitude. And then the third piece of this program is really about getting people, you know, being a more participative manager and getting people involved in goal setting and problem solving and decision making and all of those kinds of things. So we begin this program, and just like the rest of the curriculum that comes from Vital Learning, we always begin with something called an awareness inventory. And the demo copy of the workbook that I sent to you is a demo for two different reasons. The first is that it's missing huge amounts of information that are just not included, but what you do have has actually also been truncated. So the information that is in your demo workbook is not complete. And of course, then there's other things that are missing entirely. So what I'd like to ask you to do, and I had asked, and hopefully you got the instruction, I had asked you to bring a copy of the demo workbook with you and a pencil. I'd like everyone to turn to page 3 and to take a moment right now, if you would please, and answer the 5 questions on page 3. Do you agree or do you disagree? So just take a moment and answer the 5 questions for me. And I'm going to ask you to do one additional thing. As you're reading the 5 questions, I'd like you to circle one of the 5 questions that bothers you in some way. There's something about it that just bothers you and you'd like to discuss it. So as you're going through the 5 questions, find the one that you'd like to talk about the most. Okay, hopefully you've had a chance to respond to the 5 questions. I'm going to ask if someone on the call today, as you were going through the 5, was there one there that you would like to talk about that bothered you in some way? Something about it bothered you. Who would like to volunteer one of the questions for discussion?
How about
Susan, hi, this is Mal. I think one that I can just see would, when I say bothers me, I can just see there being some discussion about what this limit might be, but the last one, number 5, there's a limit to how much open communication should be allowed.
Yeah.
And I think that gets into a very interesting conversation about do you need to police that? And I think sometimes I get just sort of to answer my own point here is that I think if people understand the goals and objectives and what they're trying to achieve, that the open communication will, if you assume the best in people, the open communication will focus on what they're trying to achieve and not get out of hand.
Yeah, exactly. That particular question number 5, and I failed to mention this, by the way, if you have your demo workbook, and hopefully you all do, if you turn pages 4 and 5, you are presented with what we call the book answers, which I tell people as we get into the discussion on these, that these are the answers, these are the so-called book answers, but that does not mean that we can't disagree with the book answers, and maybe you have a situation or something that facilitates a different answer, and we're certainly interested in hearing that. So question number 5 is certainly one, you know, the whole idea of policing how much open communication should be allowed, that kind of thing. That's always an interesting one. And of course, you see that the book answer is that, you know, disagree, that open communication is something that you know, is the foundation of trust and something that people should be able to do, communicate openly. Any others in here as you're looking at the book answers and flipping back and forth? Any others that you would comment on?
Susan, this is Rogene. I think right off the bat, the phrase that really bothered me was that most leaders do not have adequate time to communicate effectively. If they don't have adequate time to communicate effectively, they have no business being a leader.
Right, right. And that's you know, obviously we're preaching to the choir here, all
right.
of us on the call are teaching leadership, and of course the best way to learn something is always to teach it. That's always been how I have learned. But, you know, and so we're you know, representing kind of the more enlightened point of view, but it's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating the pushback that you will get in the classroom on that particular item. And of course, what, you know, what I often will ask is, so if we don't have adequate time to communicate effectively, let me ask you this. Do we find the time to put out the fires when we have not communicated effectively? And of course, we always have time to, you know, to be reactive, but for some reason we don't believe that we have the time to be proactive. So it's really an interesting thing. What I like to do with the awareness inventory is, and I'm not intending to do this as a train the trainer, but I'll just share with you the reason that I love this activity is it occurs at the beginning. There are typically 10 statements here. You only have the first 5. And what this does for me as the facilitator, it gives me a chance to take the pulse of the entire room. I get a chance to see where people are coming from philosophically. Earlier we looked at that continuum with coach versus controller, and this really starts to give me a sense of where people really are operating from philosophically. But what's really powerful about it is that it's all done, there's a variety of ways to process it. And what I like to do is I like to have the group, when someone comes up with something that's way on that controller end of the scale, I like to get the group, I sort of throw it back to the group, well, what do you think about that? Does anyone have a perspective on that that you can share? And so what happens is it's people's peers that start to pull them back in and cause them to take a look and do some analysis and check their own thinking. It's not me as the facilitator that's having to be in that role of saying, well, maybe you want to think of that this way. I really love to have the participants themselves, you know, reel that person back in for me. And I can almost, you know, say in every instance that I've been successful in getting that to happen. So it's a really powerful discussion activity that we use here in the front end of the program. What I'd like to do is I'd like to take us into the introduction of the first skill point, which you will find in your sample workbook there on page 7. And each of the skill points, in fact, there's another page, couple of pages of text that you're missing here that kind of introduces the whole idea of the essential skills of leadership. We don't do reading in the program. There is a lot of content in the workbook, and I'll talk a little bit more about that towards the end of the session. We don't do reading, but what I have been doing with Vital Learning's workshops that is one of the customization features that I'll be talking a little bit, I'll be talking about customization a little bit later. What I've been doing before I deliver a workshop is I try to get to either the CEO or the president of the organization. I try to get to the highest level leader in the organization that I can get to, and I create a little interview that relates to the skills that I'm teaching in that particular workshop. So in the essential skills of leadership, there are 3 skill points: maintain self-esteem, focus on behavior, and encourage team member participation. And what I do is I craft 3 questions, and I, work with an administrative secretary if I have to and say, you know, I'm going to be coming in to do some leadership training. I would really like to interview the leader. It will take 5 minutes. I have just 3 questions, and here are the questions that I'd like to ask them, and I'd like to record the interview. And then what I do is I take those recordings, and so as I introduce this skill point, and obviously we'd be talking a little bit about self-esteem and its importance and all of that, and then I say, now in preparation for being with you today, I had a chance to interview whatever executive it is, and I ask them this question. I ask them, can you tell me about a time that a leader had a huge impact on your self-esteem, either positively or negatively. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to share a sample of the kind of thing that I've gotten when I've asked leaders this question. And this particular example comes from a healthcare environment. Here it is. Whoops, that didn't work, did it? Let's try it again. Nope. Well, I was going to let you listen to an interview. I'm very sorry. I don't know why it's not working. It worked when I practiced it before we got on. I will share with you that this is a really has really been a powerful addition to these workshops. And one of the side benefits that has come from getting the leader, the highest level leader, I don't know if you're familiar with Ed Badoff's book, Leaders as Teachers. You know, the idea of bringing executives actually into the classroom and having them be involved in a leadership development developmental process is just fabulous. In a lot of organizations, that's just not going to happen. And what's really interesting is that I'm often brought into organizations to do training by someone in an HR or a training function. And very often, these highest level leaders don't even know that I'm there, and they don't even know about the work that I'm doing. And so when I knock on their door and ask them to allow me to interview them, suddenly they become very interested and very engaged in the fact that this leadership training is taking place. And it's just a wonderful thing to get higher level leaders involved and engaged and interested in training initiatives. So that's been one of the benefits that has come from this. So we introduced the topic of self-esteem as I just shared. And then we talk a little bit about Maslow, and usually people in the room have encountered Maslow in some management course that they took in college or maybe even a high school psychology course. So I always ask the group, you know, what do you remember about Maslow? What was this hierarchy of needs all about? So would someone tell me what was Maslow's hierarchy of needs? What was the gist of his model?
You ensure that needs are met first before you move up. The basic needs are met first.
Right. So we start with those, you know, physiological needs down at the bottom of the hierarchy. And my son Adam, who's traveled around the world and lived in places like Palestine and Cairo and Nicaragua, has reminded me that most of the people of the world are at the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, they're not worried about self-esteem. They're trying to find food and water. And of course, once we have those basic needs met, then we move along the scale to safety and social and self-esteem and self-actualization needs. Now, what I'd like to ask you today is I'd like you to look at Maslow's hierarchy and see if we can use this for a slightly different reason. And I'd like you to tell me, by using Maslow's hierarchy, why would people work for you? Remember we asked that question a little earlier today, and we said there were two reasons. People will work for us because they want to work for us, or people will work for us because they have to work for us. So if we were to draw the want-to line, people will work for us because they want to, where on Maslow's hierarchy would we draw that line? Could someone take a guess at where we draw the want-to line? Where would that line go? What do you think?
Probably between self-esteem and self-actualization.
Well, you've notched it up just a little bit. Was that Tony?
Yes, it was. I'm sorry.
Tony, thank you. Yes, you're real close, and really it's between social and self-esteem. And what's really interesting about this is, you know, a lot of organizations, a lot of leaders that I work with actually draw the line just in between safety and social. They think that meeting those social needs, that, hey, if my team feels well-networked and well-connected and they've got a lot of social connections, and quite frankly, there's been a lot of leadership books that have sort of created that impression out there. In fact, the Gallup's Q12, with the idea of having a best friend at work, they've been strong advocates that this is something that really creates creates engagement. But the real truth is that the real commitment line, the real engagement line really is in that self-esteem area. And this is what differentiates us. This is what creates best workplaces out there, is when we're meeting people's self-esteem needs. If you think about it, and I often use myself as an example, any workplace at all can meet those bottom three needs, given, of course, we're paying people a living wage, and I know some people are not getting that, and that's unfortunate. But given that people are receiving a living wage out there, most organizations can meet those needs. And I'll use myself as an example and say, let's say I quit my job tomorrow at the team approach, and I decide to work for a McDonald's. And I can say that safely because there's no one on the call today from McDonald's. And then I ask the class, I say, okay, so let's say Susan is going to leave her home. She's going to get an apartment downtown Lancaster, perhaps several roommates. Can I meet my physiological needs? And of course, they'll say yes. Can I meet my safety needs? Well, if I choose an apartment in the right area of town? Yes. Can I meet my social needs? Yes. And then we start talking, you know, about the rest of the triangle. And of course, if that particular McDonald's restaurant is being run by, you know, some really enlightened leadership team and they really understand this, yes, I can meet my self-esteem needs, maybe not my self-actualization needs. That really depends on me and how I'm designed. That's a pretty individual kind of thing that relates to my internal values and a number of other things. But the real thing is that where we really engage people, what really creates engagement in the workplace, of course, is that area of self-esteem. And what I was going to do is share one more short activity with you before I tell you a little bit about this curriculum that you've been taking a short peek at today. Let's take a look at exercise number 3. You will find this on page 9 of your sample workbook. And I like to introduce this exercise by talking about, you know, this whole idea that comes from Buddhism called mindfulness. And I'm not a Buddhist myself, but I have always been intrigued with this idea of mindfulness, this idea of being fully alert and fully awake and in the present and really tuned into what's happening. And I think when we're, you know, we wake up in the morning and we see the news on the front page of the newspaper, which of course today was, you know, pretty awful. It's been awful for several weeks, you know, and then we get to work and, you know, whatever happens there, all of the things that are going on, and we're moving from one meeting to the next and one challenge to the next, and very often we're just not tuning into what we're saying and how we're saying it. And it really comes down to, engagement really comes down to the words that we use as a leader. And what this particular exercise is looking at some very simple things that any of us might say on any given day of the week, but we may not be fully tuned into what it is that we're saying and how it's impacting others. So what we're asked to do in exercise number 9 is page number 9, exercise number 3, we're asked to just simply identify whether these statements would have a positive impact on someone's self-esteem, a negative impact, a minus sign we would use there, or no impact whatsoever, and we would use a 0. And so I'm just going to skip the first 4, numbers 1 through 4, and I'm going to read number 5 to you. You've been late 3 times this month. Would that have a positive impact on my self-esteem, a negative impact on my self-esteem, or no impact whatsoever? What do you think?
Negative.
Negative. And who said
no
that?
No impact.
Okay, I hear 2 different answers. Let's start with who said negative. Was that?
That was Kathy.
Kathy. Kathy said negative, and someone said no impact. Who said that?
Suzanne.
And Suzanne, tell me why this would have no impact.
Because it's simply stating fact.
It's simply stating a fact, absolutely. You know, what's often interesting, and thank you, Suzanne, what's often interesting about this particular item here is that 9 times out of 10, supervisors, team leaders, people that are in this training will say that that's a negative statement. And so I'll stop right there and I'll say, okay, you've been late 3 times this month. What kind of a statement is that? And Suzanne, you just said that it's a fact. But if they don't get that, if someone doesn't say, well, that's a fact, I'll say, okay, today is today Tuesday or Wednesday? Today is Tuesday, I think, right? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
I'll say, today is Tuesday. It is now 12:42. Tomorrow is Wednesday. The sky is blue. What are these statements? And then eventually someone will say, it's a fact. And once we establish that it is a fact, I will ask them, is a fact ever positive, negative, or are facts neutral? What do you think? Are facts positive, negative, or neutral?
Neutral.
Neutral.
Facts are absolutely neutral. Facts are neutral. What about an opinion? If we share an opinion with someone, is it positive, negative, or is it neutral? Think about your opinions.
Either.
Yes. Usually, if you have an opinion about something, most of the time our opinions are not, oh, ho-hum, you know, I could, you know, I mean, perhaps. But most of the time when we are have an opinion that's enough, substantial enough that we care to voice it, it's usually because we're voicing it in a positive way or we're voicing it in a negative way. So opinions are either positive or negative. Facts are based on behavior. Opinions are based on our attitudes. Behavior is only ever something that you can hear or you can see. Okay? Attitudes are things that are internal. They are things that we think or we feel. And this introduces us, and we get into this in the next unit a little bit more, as I shared with you, the skill points of behavior versus attitude. And it's an area of the program where people really start to build those skills of really learning to speak in terms of behavior and not attitude. I'm going to stop the preview, the official preview, the little taste. I realize it was just a tiny, tiny little whiff, but I'm going to tell you how you can get a full look at the Essential Skills of Leadership or one of the pieces of leadership curriculum in just a moment. Before I do that, I wanted to highlight in your demo workbook that you received this morning, if you turn to the back of that workbook beginning on page 15, what the publisher has done, Vital Learning, is they have included for their core leadership series, they have three different series of leadership curriculum. This particular leadership series includes 12 modules, which are listed on pages 15, 16, 17, 18, and 17 and 18. And what's really nice, if you've not looked at this, is they've not only included the objectives for each of these programs, but they've included the skill points. Now, with the exception of the Essential Skills of Leadership and the Essential Skills of Communicating, if you take a look at coaching job skills, for example, you will notice that what the skill points actually are is a model. The skill points are a model that we're actually teaching in the remaining 10 programs. We're teaching team leaders and supervisors a way of handling a challenge that they're confronted with, the kinds of things that they're confronted with day in and day out. If you take a look at the top of page 17, for example, you see the model for resolving conflicts. Now, this particular resolving conflicts program, it relates to resolving conflicts between two team members. It has nothing to do with the leader and the team member. It's conflict that's between two people on the team. And it's really interesting. When you teach this model, obviously you want people to go back and practice, but you don't often go back. Hopefully people don't go back to a situation where they're experiencing conflict immediately. I had someone tell me that there's a job aid card in the workbook. They sat in their office with the job aid card on their lap so no one could see it. They were behind their desk, had the two team leaders sitting in front of their desk, and they basically kept on looking down and they followed the model and they said it was just amazing how it just walked them through the conflict. So these are the 12 core modules that are part of the leadership series. And what I wanted to talk with you about for a couple of minutes is the fact that, as you have seen me do today, the leadership curriculum is, first of all, it's self-customizing, and you can also customize it. I'd like to talk for just a moment about the self-customizing part of the curriculum. I mentioned, of course, that there is a model in 10 of the 12 workshops here. And We use both behavioral modeling. In fact, Vital Learning, which originally was the training division of McGraw-Hill, this is where behavioral modeling was actually invented. I know there's a lot of publishers that use it, but it was invented here. So we use behavioral modeling, which gives people a chance to go through three sort of contrived practices. But then what happens is the participants identify if it's a situation, if they're using supporting change, they identify some change that's taking place in their area on their team, and they use their real situation to create a job-specific practice. And so not only does it customize at the organizational level, it customizes at the individual level. Of course, we can customize objectives. An example of this is in the Essential Skills of Leadership. One of the rules in my book, 42 Rules of Employee Engagement, is be a low-tech communicator. And I usually add that as an additional objective for the program, because what I'm finding as I interact with my clients is that a lot of leaders today are hiding behind technology and are not having the important conversations that they should be having with their teams. And certainly we've seen some really dramatic examples of this in the news. For example, when Radio Shack fired 400 people with an email, or people that are getting fired via a text message. These are the kinds of things that are happening out there. We have all this technology, and leaders sometimes that are uncomfortable because they haven't had this kind of basic training that we're talking about today will hide behind technology to do things that really should not be done that way. So we can customize. If there's a particular objective that relates to the topical area and you want to add something in, you certainly can do that. The awareness inventory, you had a little taste of that today. If there was an item that you wanted to add, certainly the awareness inventory could be customized. I shared with you an example of how I add executive interviews into the curriculum, which is a way that I customize it for my clients and bring their voice into the classroom with me. A Vital Learning's curriculum straight out of the box comes with levels 3 and levels 4 of Kirkpatrick's 4 levels. It comes with levels 1 and levels 2 out of the box. We add level 3 and level 4. We've created something called the Team Leader Cafe, which is a delivery mechanism that we use to deliver Vital's curriculum. And we will do a baseline 360 feedback evaluation, getting feedback from the direct reports and the manager and anyone else that needs to be involved on the behaviors that are taught in these courses. And then 9 months, 12 months, 18 months later, we reassess the leader to see what progress they're making as they're involved in the leadership development process. With level 4, as I mentioned, this curriculum is designed to drive employee engagement. And so we would use an employee engagement survey that would, look at the teams that are affected by the leadership behavior, the leaders that are actually participating in the process, and we'd have a chance to see how the training is driving engagement within your organization. So those are some of the customization kinds of things that you can do with the curriculum. Another thing that is important to mention is that, and I don't think we have anyone on the telephone today that comes from the education industry, but people that are in the education industry all know about ITCAP. It was not something I personally was familiar with until I began to work with Vital's curriculum, but ITCAP is the Industry Training Credit Approval Process. I think the P is for process. And they are an organization that's highly esteemed among educational institutions because they have the authority to evaluate content for college level credit. And all of Vital Learning's courseware, not only their leadership curriculum, but also their sales training, their customer service training, and the curriculum that's called Work Ready, that is really for individual contributors. All of that curriculum has been evaluated, and all of it has college credit available. So this is something that we can work with you on. We can get college credit if you have training funds that you can deliver with tax credits through your tuition reimbursement program. This saves your organization some money to use this content this way. But the other thing is, and this is a newer relationship that Vital Learning has created with the University of Phoenix, which we're very excited about. And a person going through Vital Learning's training can actually earn up to 30 credits from the content directly provided from Vital Learning. So we're very, very excited about that, and I certainly can explore that with you offline if you'd like to explore that further. What I'd like to share with you today before we wrap things up is we had, as I said, a whiff. We called it a preview. It was a very, very short experience with the content today. And what I would like to offer you, if you would like to go further, is I have recorded some virtual train-the-trainer sessions, which are part of a certification process. There is no certification requirement, incidentally, by the publisher, Vital Learning, to use their content. You can purchase facilitation materials and workbooks, and you could start training tomorrow. We feel that Train the Trainer is always helpful for people to be able to have access to that prior to running the training. So I've created a virtual Train the Trainer track, and I currently have recordings of Essential Skills of Leadership, which is the ESL that you see there, the Essential Skills of Communicating, which is the ESC, and Developing and Coaching Others. Those are three different modules from Vital Learning. Since I charge $195 to attend my virtual Train the Trainer session, and since a combination workbook and online cost $65, the value of those items would be $260 if you were to attend one of those three Train the Trainers. So what I'm offering today, since you have taken the time to join me and participate, if you would like to evaluate this content further, you could choose either the Essential Skills of Leadership, the Essential Skills of Communicating, or Developing and Coaching Others. I will send you my recording of my Train the Trainer session, plus a workbook, and 10 days access to the corresponding online course. And if you will take me up on this evaluation and go through the Train the Trainer, after we have debriefed on the telephone and talked about your experience and answered your questions, I will send you my EEIQ cards, which I gave you a short opportunity to take a look at today. I will send you those so that you can use those in anything that you do. So we are 5 minutes before our time, and I'd like to share with you the reason that I included the leadership mystery as pre-work yesterday. One of the things that really differentiates this publisher from DDI and Achieve Global and other publishers of leadership curriculum out there, believe it or not, there's numbers of things, but one of the things that really differentiates them and really jumps out to everyone that has familiarity with the other publishers is the workbook. The classroom workbook, when people think of a workbook, they think of a bunch of worksheets. This particular workbook, half of the workbook is actually used in the classroom experience. The second half of the workbook, which is a substantial section of the workbook, is content. It's extra content. It's reference content. It's content to support leaders, team leaders, supervisors, and managers when they return to the job. And what it does, what it includes a number of things, but one of the key things that it includes is something that's called a troubleshooting guide. So the mystery that I sent out to you was actually one of the troubleshooting guide content areas that relates to this course. So in every curriculum, so for example, the troubleshooting guide in delegating would be totally different troubleshooting guide than the troubleshooting guide in providing performance feedback. So in the leadership, essential skills of leadership, we have five or six different items. And one of the items, and there's a full page for each of these troubleshooting items, one of the items is that the team member reaches a poor solution. And so what I like to do, because I want to make sure that people really get the power and the essence and really notice the troubleshooting guide, when they walk into the classroom, I, you know, give them, I have four or five of these mystery sheets, and I have them huddle in small groups and talk about it. And then at the very end of the training, I say, now remember the mystery that we started out with today. What I'd like you to do is I'd like you to find that mystery in the troubleshooting guide, get back together with your team, see how closely your solution aligned with the solution in the book, and then after you've done that, take a look at the other troubleshooting items that are in the workbook. And so to tell you the solution to this particular mystery, and Patty, thank you for sharing your solution with us earlier today. You were really right on target. First of all, they provide an analysis for us when the team member reaches a poor solution. The analysis is that problem solving is an involved process, and the team member has not thought through each step of a workable solution. And then the workbook goes on to give us four different strategies. Guide the team member through a problem-solving process. Help the team member define the problem clearly to distinguish between symptoms and the problem. Help the team member analyze the problem's causes and develop a solution that relates to the causes. If necessary, write out a list of questions to be answered and send the team member on a fact-finding mission. To test how realistic the solution is, have the team member write out an action plan identifying the steps to be performed, individuals responsible, and the target dates. Then in addition to those strategies, it references workbook pages 67 and 68. And after we get through the troubleshooting guide section of the book, pages 62 through 71 is additional text. It's additional content that relates to the topics that are presented in the troubleshooting guide and supports them further with further learning. So that's the content that is in the back of the workbook that is so very, very valuable and a great reference piece for the team leader as they return to the job. So I wanted to give you a chance to experience that and understand how that worked through the leadership mystery. I'd like to thank you. It is 12:59. I'd like to thank you for taking the time to join me today. We are right up against the hour. I certainly will stay on the line to answer any questions that you might have about Vital's curriculum, and then I will look forward to following up with you to see if you would like to take advantage of the $49 preview that I invited you to look at today. Thanks so much, everybody. Any questions?
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Susan.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
I have a question.
And who is that?
Oh, this is Doug.
Hi, Doug.
Hi, how are you doing? This would be something that would be done through our HR department, and I was wondering if they're interested in the preview, if I could have one of them look at do that.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. I'm going to forward this over to them then and see what they have to think of, because I think this might be applicable to a lot of people here. I work at a medical school that, well, there's also psychology programs and other programs too, but a lot of the people, you know, have students coming in, they don't necessarily know how to always be good leaders.
Sure.
Even though
sure.
They're trying to do students, they just think that they had to, you know, teach, and they don't realize a lot of leadership involved.
Yes.
So
I would agree.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, a lot of them just have done research or are physicians, and they don't have their skills. So.
Mm-hmm.
So great. Thank you.
Well, I look forward to following up with you, Doug, and look forward to being in class with you in the fall.
Yep, we're away.
Thanks so much, and I'll be talking to you soon.
Okay, great.
Bye-bye. Bye.